Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Brandon Tierney and Sal Licata on WFAN The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Dude, that was sickening. We were texting a lot throughout the course of the good parts of the game. I cannot believe what happened. I cannot believe that the
Did
Knicks
they definitely
lost
lose? Because I'm with you. Did they really lose?
How disgusting. Hard to even come on and rip them apart, and today's going to be therapy for both of us, for all the listeners and the callers. I mean, this is what talk radio is for. I'd be calling in the station today to vent. I cannot. It was a near perfect game. That was the way. I was texting you, I love this matchup. Mm-hmm. The offense is moving, cutting to the rim, kicking out for the open three, attacking, getting to the free throw line. And then it all fell apart, and there are many reasons why, but I cannot believe that we are here talking about the Knicks with an all-time collapse.
So listen, if we wanted to, Sal, we could start the show, we could do an hour on the refs. We could do an hour on Tom Thibodeau and what happened in those last, you know, 6, 7, 8 minutes. We could do an hour on Brunson.
Yep.
We're tripping all over himself late. We could do an hour or so on the inability for the Knicks to seemingly have a clean inbounds play, which does go to coaching. We're not going to do that. Listen, what we should know by now is that these crazy fourth quarter comebacks in the NBA are more and more common, and you got to be ready for them. So, you know, the post-game reaction, I know that Josh Hart said this. We've heard this in previous games as well. The Celtics said this when the Knicks did this to the Celtics. We got to finish. We got to play more aggressively. Yeah, yes, you do. Now, I still feel good about this. I do. I think the Knicks are the better team. But the one thing that I texted back to you, and they were still in a really good place at this point, I didn't think it would come back to bite him. I said, yeah, you know, as we were going cat and offense vibing, Knicks look good, blah, blah, blah. I said, no doubt, I'm happy, whatever, as I paraphrase. I'm not going to look at my phone to actually read the tweet word for the text word for. But I did say, bigger picture, this is how they want to play. Like, this is the one, like, the Knicks have been able to walk on a basketball court this entire postseason and outlast people, all right, and be fresh and be strong in the final 5 or 6 minutes of a game. And the Pacers might be the only team that could stand up to that, whether it's being in great shape or having enough guys to keep their guys fresh to do damage at the end of the game.
But I don't
inexplicably bad loss, but I still feel okay.
Fair enough. I don't think that's why they lost, though. I don't think they lost because of the Pacers' pace. The Knicks choked the game away. Josh Hart said they were playing not to lose. That's the problem. You can't play not to lose. I mean, even me as a fan, now it's different watching this thing slip away. And I'm like, oh, my God, is this actually happening? And I keep yelling. My wife's falling asleep and going, wow, what's going on? I'm like, I can't believe this. Everything that needed to go wrong did go wrong. Missed free throws, turnovers, Brunson looking gassed. The Pacers not missing a shot. Bridges not playing defense. The refs making bad calls. The Knicks making bad decisions. Like, it was a, when something like that happens, and the only game that I could compare it to is the 28-3 blown lead by the Falcons in the Super Bowl. And we all watched that as a Super Bowl, but I watched it as a Falcons fan. And it was one thing after another. It's just like, okay, well, if this doesn't happen. That's what this felt like. Now, the difference is this is game one of the Eastern Conference Finals, not the Super Bowl, but that's the type of collapse that this was, BT. I don't think it was because of the Pacers' pace or anything the Pacers did better than the Knicks. I think the Knicks choked. They beat themselves. Hit a free throw, protect the basketball, make a good call the timeout the right way. Like, there were many different things that they play defense, get a hand in somebody's face, make a proper foul. There were any one of those little things that they could have done throughout the course of that finish, they would have won the freaking game, and they did none of them.
But that's why I said we could start the show and do an hour on so many different things. There's no doubt. But to me, it boils down to, now, you want to use the word choke? I'm fine with that. I get it. When the optics of the finish and the throat and the Halliburton, the bounce, and then the overtime, and I mean, what a wild, crazy night. Like, I really woke up, and I know that I'm not even saying this for effect. I'm like, they did lose. They lost the game, right? All right. So to me, it comes down to really two things. The inability to stop the three-point shot and ball dominant pounding of the basketball late, where Jalen Brunson looked like he was on a sheet of ice. And I don't understand the confusion. And this comes back to a coaching thing for me. And listen, we talked about this before the series, and I very clearly said that Rick Carlisle's the better coach.
Yeah.
He is a much better basketball coach. He's just a better coach. We could debate that. That's fine. I don't even want to, but I think he's a lot better than Tom Thibodeau. Can you explain to me why every time the Knicks try to inbound the basketball, they look like a fourth grade CYO team, or they really what they really look like, and we've seen the videos here, and they're cute when you're watching 6-year-olds trip all over themselves like T-ball. Like, you know, your daughter's not there yet, but when you play T-ball, somebody hits the ball and 10 kids scatter to it like an ant, like jumping on a drip of ice cream on the sidewalk in August. Everybody goes to the basketball. That's how the Knicks inbounds plays look. Like, what? How is there not a clear ability to inbound the ball and get the offense going? And I focus on that because if they had that last night, they would have won the game.
Here's one thing that has been consistent with the Knicks. They have not been a great free throw shooting team, and they have been sloppy. Those are things that it's very hard to overcome to win a championship. Back to the coaching thing for a second, because in real time watching this now, I didn't think it was going to be a factor the way that the game went, but in the third quarter, I think it was like 9 minutes ago, something like that. The Pacers had a play that I forget, it was out of bounds off a Turner or something like that. And they were begging Carlisle to challenge it.
Yes.
And he said,
yes, he's like,
he
get out of here.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He said, go play.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go play. Didn't even entertain. Just get out of here. Go play.
Yeah, he actually motioned with his hand.
I don't know if it was the next possession or a few minutes later, the Knicks had a foul go against them. And Tibbs challenged it. Now, I know why he did. Because it was on Brunson, who again found himself in foul trouble. And at that point, with 9 minutes to go in the third quarter, after Carlisle just said, get out of here, I'm not wasting my challenge at this particular point, Tibbs did use his challenge, and he lost it. It was not overturned. It was a foul on Brunson. And then shortly thereafter, Brunson gets another foul on him. And so that, to me, showed the coaching, I don't want to say difference, like, and Carlisle way outmatched Tibbs, but that was one example. And by the way, look at how the rest of the game played out. How many times did Carlisle use that bleeping challenge and cost the Knicks? So that right there, 9 minutes ago in the third quarter, where it looks like nothing, Carlisle dismissed the idea of using a challenge by his players, and turns out he needed that. Tibbs burned his because Brunson again found himself gassed and in foul trouble, and the Knicks had no challenges down the stretch.
Yep.
Not that it would have made a difference for them, because a lot of those calls seemed to be the right calls that the Pacers ended up challenging and getting overturned, obviously. But that's one example of, I do think Tibbs got outcoached.
Yeah, and by the way, if the referees get the goaltend, then it's a different game. Now, that was, I think, goaltend. goaltenders. Well, I mean, obviously.
It was a goaltend, dude.
There's no question.
And it changed the whole game.
There's no question. They butchered that. 1,000% that's a goaltend. And you and I don't lean on excuses too much. Do you win? Do you lose? But the refs were bad last night. I thought they missed a few things. The goaltend is easy when the ball's coming. Like, is it on the way up or is it on the way down? And usually, you know, it's easy to determine did it hit the backboard first or not. That was a little, I'll give him credit, like, or a little wiggle room. That was a trickier read because it was like, tick, tick, like it was very close.
But how could that not be reviewed?
I don't know.
Such bull crap. Are we going to have replay or not? You know what
I mean? Yeah, and when we do have it, do we need 6 minutes of replay?
Well, I know.
Now, listen, here's the problem. So the Pacers are very comfortable playing this way. I went back. Now, I understand, against the Bucks, game five, they trailed by 7 with 34.7 seconds to go in overtime. They won. They trailed by Cavs. They trailed the Cavs by 7 in the next round. Game two, that was, with 46.7 seconds to go. They won. Like, they are very accustomed to playing this way, and that could be very problematic for the Knicks. I know we're all out of whack. I know everybody's exhausted. I know everybody's... I was going to say, I know that everybody's down, but I don't get the sense. I think that we're pissed that we let it slip, but I still think that we're fairly resolute. I think, I feel that the Knicks community still feels good about this team, and I think that they should.
It's a long series. I'm not going to go over the board one way or another, but I do need to get the frustrations out from last night.
Oh, I get it.
That cannot happen. Now, if there's any team that I believe that can come back and bounce back from that, it is Brunson. It is hard. It's that type of mentality. They've been here before, maybe not with that epic collapse. And, dude, the reality is they had the Pacers beat. So now you're going to have to beat them 4 out of a remaining 6 games because you had them beat in game 1 and you coughed it up at home, no less. All the talk about home court, out the window now. And how do you feel comfortable down the stretch when the Knicks were in the best spot that they've been in the postseason, closing out a game, and they couldn't close out the game. But I don't want to go nuts about losing the series and this or that. It's game one, and that cannot happen, and there are many different reasons. And before we get to the calls, I got to get one more thing off my chest. Mikal Bridges, who's supposed to be a great defensive player, didn't foul Toppin in overtime, but even more so than that, what the bleep was he doing on Halliburton on the final play? Get up on him! Get up on him. He lets him run right past him, and then he backpedals and, you know, knocks down the shot. Of course, it goes up in the air and comes back down. But Bridges did not have a good game, and certainly not defensively, in a spot where they just needed one freaking shutdown possession.
Yeah.
One. Neesmith, somebody get an arm or a body on the guy. Foul him, knock him down. You can't keep letting him shoot these threes. But Bridges is supposed to be that lockdown defender, and there was no defense to be found down the stretch.
You look at the game log here, Sal. It's like 3-3-3, foul shots, 3-3-3. I mean, guys, come on. You know what they're doing. There's one way to come back in this game, and that is to get behind the three-point stripe and just start firing away. And I don't understand... Like, listen, the main gripe here, there's a lot, but God, for somebody who's a defensive coach, can you set up a stop, dude? Now, this goes back to one of the things that does worry us, you and I both, about this team. We have said, although we've grown and I've grown, you've had more confidence in them than I have this year, and I've grown watching them grow, okay? And I still think they're going to win the series, I do. But the thing that you and I were always, you know, comment on was their two best players are bad defenders. And when you get in situations when you're, I don't know why the Knicks were in drop coverage so much. When you drop, you are just saying, oh, here's the red carpet, let it loose, make yourself comfortable. The drop coverage was gross. And when you have a smallish, you know, I say this with respect, weak compared to these other guys, Brunson's not that strong, small, weak point guard, he's going to get abused. Dude, and when you have a slow to react softish big in Towns, you're going to get destroyed. They got to go to film and they got to go to work because Rick Carlisle is not about to give the series away.
And by the way, with all that being said, they should have won the game. Like, we know their deficiencies, we know that they could be sloppy. They should not have lost.
Would you rather have lost 121-89 or the way they lost? If you're a Knicks player, forget about us as fans.
I'd rather have lost that game any other way. That is a sickening, gut-wrenching, potentially devastating blow.
I hear you on that. As much as I think that they're going to win, that's the kind of loss.
Oh.
There's no guarantee that they respond from that the way they need to. There's no guarantee. We can sit there and tell you they're fine, and I think they're going to win the series,
right.
But that was such... Such a demoralizing all-time loss. You cannot categorize it any other way.
BT and Sal on the Fan just getting started here. Our friends at Town Fair Tire remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires. From Connecticut to Maine, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Anthony's on Staten Island. What's up, Ant?
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere. Applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Chris in Monmouth County. What's going on, Chris?
What's up, Boomer? Gio, thanks for taking the call. First, I have to say, I can't even imagine what Evan's going to say this afternoon, but I'll leave that for later. So before the game starts, I put the TV on. I put 203 on to see MSG. I'm thinking the pregame is on, right, with Allen and all those other guys and Bill Pito and Wally. And they're playing the Game 7 94 Knicks Pacers. And every game I watch, I'm standing at the television. I'm not even sitting down with my all this water watching. And I'm telling you, I was like, I'm 48 now, and I'm getting jacked up for this game. I'm watching the Knicks. I'm watching Patrick. I'm watching Mason with his little baby jump hook. Harper hitting threes, and we win that game. And the greatest moment in that game is Patrick hugging that guy in the camel sport coat. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? The greatest moment of my life is like a regular person except for my wife and my daughters.
Sure.
Anyway,
yep.
Watching this game last night, and I'm saying to myself, this is tremendous. We're going to get this game one win. And then the magic of the Pacers-Knicks on their side last night starts to happen. And as I'm waking up this morning, Boomer, I'm with you. It was awful. We wanted that game one victory. But you know what? In a way, I think this is also good because good comes from bad. And if that Halliburton, who I can't stand, and I just, you want to hate him, I really feel if we don't use that as motivation to get through these next six games, I don't know what it's going to be. But I firmly believe, like you do, Gio, we can win this series. It'll be tough. But if I look at NBA, the Knicks are always involved in the most interesting games. And as a fan, I'll take that any day of the week. Then popping threes or like what the Celtics did last year and just cruise through. But I'm excited. I was angry, but I'm happy. I mean, I'd like to be here, right? As a sports fan, you want your team here.
Yeah,
100%. You got to go with the ups and you got to go with the ups and downs, man. That's all there is to it. I mean, the thing that we took out of this game, we said it early this morning at 6 o'clock. We'll say it again: is that the game was opened up and really felt like you saw the athleticism that the Knicks have, and even with Jalen Brunson sitting on the bench and he not having a great night from the 3-point line, he still was the engine that made the team roll. And then when he was down, OG Anunoby actually got involved. Campaign got involved. So, look, I thought it was an amazing game. It was such a heartbreaking loss. But now we know how the Boston Celtic fans feel after game 1 and 2.
Yeah, and I, Chris, agree with you. The Knicks can win this series. I mean, I think the Knicks still will win this series. I loved what I saw for 95% of the game. And I mean, it's not like they got their doors blown off. It's not everybody's still healthy. I mean, it's just this was a miracle finish from a team that, by the way, the Pacers have been doing a lot of this. The Knicks did it to the Celtics. Now it happened to them. Long series, two good teams. We all thought it was going to be a 7-game series. Plaster that choke picture, like Boomer said, all over the practice facility, all over the garden, on everybody's locker, and come out and win game two and then take the series back, get the momentum back, which I believe they're going to do on Friday night. Is this the same Larry in Indiana that claimed he was going to drive out to the Kickoff to Summer show last year and then never did? I mean, that was, remember that whole thing?
Yes, I did.
We heard about Larry. He said he was going to drive and go to the Kickoff to Summer, and like his wife wasn't going to go or something, and he never showed up. Larry, good morning. How are you?
Hey, pretty good, Boomer. Gio, how you doing?
Good, Larry. We're a little bit disappointed at what happened last night, but we're excited for a big Kickoff to Summer show tomorrow. Are you making the trek out this year?
Well, I'll tell you what. If I get to meet you and Boomer and Gio, I sure will.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course you would, Larry. Now, what happened last year?
Well, my father had a stroke.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I had to turn around and come back.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Larry.
Hey, but if I get an opportunity to meet you and Boomer, that would be something that I'd never forget.
Well, listen, Larry, that's a lock. If you show up there, we'll spend some time with you. We'll talk to you for a while. I mean, I you know, if that's what you want to do, for sure. I mean, just be careful driving all the way out from Indiana. But, yeah, we'll spend some time with you.
I think Al would even have a lunch with you.
I don't know about it. I'm not sure about
it. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Okay.
I've heard about Al's eating habits. I don't want no part of that.
Right, okay, so you're a man. Okay, good.
So what do you have to say about the game last night, Larry?
Hey, I have to be honest. You know, I really thought it was over. I thought it was over. And somehow we come back. But, hey, I give you guys credit. That was a hell of a game.
Yeah, you know, Larry, and we hope to see you tomorrow and keep checking in. And obviously, if you can't make it, we understand. But if you do show up, we'll spend a lot of time with you. And good to hear from you again. But, I mean, yeah, I think all of us thought it was over, even though we just saw the Knicks come back from 20 points in the last series, 2 games in a row.
All the ingredients for a comeback happened: turnovers, poor inbound play, shot clock, not paying attention to it and not taking it deeper. I mean, like, all these things that have to happen ended up happening within the last 3 minutes. And it's like an avalanche of momentum that you're fighting against as an athlete. And I don't know what to tell you. It was an unbelievable game. I'm sitting there with 3 minutes to go, just like every other Knicks fan out there going, man, this is a really good basketball game that our guys played, that you could see how well they matched up well. They got the ball to the hoop. They were hitting some 3-point shots that were key. But then you could say the same thing about the Pacers. And that's what makes this series so interesting, and this is why I do believe it will go 7 games.
Question for our listeners: which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
There was a disagreement between Karl Anthony Towns and OG Anunoby. They both sit down on the bench. The video is all over the place. It originated from TNT. What did I say it was called, Sean?
OT.
OT. TNT OT. So, like, if you watch the game on the NBA app, or I think it's the TNT app, they give you different camera angles. Right. And they also don't even show you a commercial. So, during one of the commercial breaks, you see the Knick bench, and you see OG Anunoby, who is not a very boisterous guy, not a real emotional guy, very to himself, pissed off at Karl Anthony Towns. So I see the video. We've all seen the video. I promptly look at the timestamp and I say, okay, what happened on the previous play? Because we could sit here and make a big deal that Karl Anthony Towns is annoyed at, sorry, that OG Anunoby is annoyed at Karl Anthony Towns, but what is the context? So the context is Aaron Naismith is about to make a three that's going to make it a 5-point game, the fifth of his six three-pointers. Karl Anthony Towns is guarding Naismith, and then the Knicks are switching on a screen.
Yep.
Cat, now I'm going to give you some analysis, my humble opinion, does not fight through the screen at all.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it's like he's running into a brick wall known as Pascal Siakam, who I think was setting the screen on him.
Yep.
And so Cat is now blocked by Siakam as Naismith is open for the three, and OG is late to then rotate. Cat puts his arm out to say, come on! Get out! Get out on Naismith! Naismith makes the shot. Timeout called. OG, who just got called out by Cat, goes to the bench and gives Cat a piece of his mind. So you tell me your interpretation. A, is this a big deal? Because I'm sure you guys had this all the time.
I don't think it's a big deal. I think it was a moment that was in, because everybody knew that it was the a moment in the game that was going to flip it one way or the other, right? Mm. And so defending that or getting a run out on that three-pointer was paramount. And the question was, were they supposed to switch it quickly? Or was Cat supposed to go over under that screen? And I think what happened is that Cat thought, and Cat has done this multiple times where he doesn't know what he's actually supposed to do, that they were switching.
Mm.
And maybe they weren't.
Well, normally I would side with OG, but OG's head was so far up his own ass in this game.
I don't disagree.
I don't know if I could say, oh, yeah, Cat's wrong, OG's right.
But the fact that Cat immediately said go tells me that he knew or at least understood that they were switching.
Yeah.
And so This is just, it's a lack of communication. We talked about it earlier with PJ Tucker.
Yes.
And PJ Tucker is there because that's what he over-communicated. Or JR said that when he called earlier. Sometimes you got to over-communicate.
The Knicks,
and I think both of those guys don't communicate well together.
No, and that's the Knicks' biggest issue defensively. We were talking yesterday, kind of previewing this series, what needs to be better, what needs to be cleaned up. It's that.
Yes.
Because when they communicate well, we see the best of their
and
defense.
By the way, we saw that painfully in Game 5 against the Celtics.
Yes.
It was like they were all individuals running around with their heads cut off.
Yes.
And it was ugly.
And that incident, I wouldn't say it was ugly. It was two basketball players.
This wasn't ugly. I'm talking about in Boston.
No, I get you. I'm just saying, like, these two guys, like, yelling at each other, and we don't know what is being said, if OG is defending himself against Kat, or if OG is lecturing Kat that he's wrong. I don't know what was said, but it makes sense that they're yelling at each other. And by the way, that's not a bad thing, because now they're communicating, and hopefully the next time there isn't miscommunication.
I would take it. Rather than sitting there silently, like, what happened? I don't know. Just kind of, he just was open.
Right.
I'd rather have them yelling at each other.
That's my reaction to it.
100%.
Like, I know we all want amazing vibes in the locker room, and everybody loves each other. But at the end of the day, they're not there to love each other. They're there to communicate, compete, and win. And whatever happened on that play, whether it's Kat's fault or OG's fault, most Knicks fans don't care whose fault it is. It's just clean that crap up.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. But as they're arguing, Mitchell Robinson is trying to be the guy to cause peace. And then even Jalen Brunson is putting his arm on OG's leg to say, all right, let's calm down. And even at that point, they have a 5-point lead with 34 seconds to go.
Yeah.
Now, what happens after that? So they have their little argument. They have their quarrel. What's the next play? The next play is when OG Anunoby can't handle the pass. And then there's, you know, the overturned loose ball foul with 19 left on the shot clock, in which if OG catches the pass, he's got an easy layup, which, again, you're not using the clock, but okay, it's back to a 7-point game.
Yep.
And instead, he can't hold on to the basketball and he bobbles it. So OG Anunoby had a horrible sequence.
Yes.
And that's why, if like you're listening, who's the biggest culprit from this choke job? He's up there, man.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's number one, but he's up there. He had a lot of moments in this game.
This is that old cliche. Yeah, you win together, you lose together. This really feels like they just lost it all together. All of them. Brunson, to King, to Tibbs, to OG, all of them. They lost it together. And you can point and finger point one or two guys, but there was so much that happened. There's so much that necessarily had to happen for them to blow that big of a lead with 2:50 left in the game. That I can't just single out one person and say, yep, this is on you. Nor would I expect one guy to say, yep, you know what? I lost this game. Look, Pete Alonso style when he airmails at the home plate. Right? This was all of those guys.
Collective fail.
Collective failure.
Steve is in Ramsey, New Jersey. Hey, Steve.
What's up, Steve?
How are you?
Good.
Good. Long-time listener since 1987, actually.
From the beginning. Steve Franklin days. There you go. Well, Pete Franklin days. Not Steve.
Question and a quick point. Halliburton comes down and hits that crazy shot at the end of the game. What do you think the conversation would be like in both cities if the Knicks were actually up 3 points and he hits that shot with his toe on the line?
Well, first of all, toe on the line talk is a very sensitive subject for me.
I think he was actually trolling you, Evan, as a Net fan.
No, because
Kevin Durant style.
It wouldn't be a correct troll because Durant's situation is actually the same as Halliburton's. It was a 2-point game.
I know.
And so foot on the line got you to overtime. In the Pacers' case, they won the game. In the Nets' case, they didn't win the game. And that's something that still haunts me from that Net game where, yeah, it sucked. His foot was on the line, but they could still have won the game. They didn't do it.
No. He was saying if the Knicks were up three,
well,
he thinks he's taking a 3-pointer, and then same thing happens. Hits the back of the rim, bounces straight up in the air, comes down, and they're celebrating like, oh, we're going overtime, and it's actually a two, and the Knicks win. What would be the conversation?
The problem with the question is Tyrese Halliburton drived inside the arc. He wouldn't have done that if it was a 3-point game.
Yeah.
He then dribbled back.
He would have given the ball up, though.
Well, everything would have been different. The Knicks would have fouled. I mean, honestly, I get the question, like, hey, what would have happened if it's a 3-point game? You think you're taking a three and it's really a two?
I think
the same thing would have happened. They would have reviewed it. They would have said the Knicks won.
Forget that. I'll change this question for him.
Yes.
What's the conversation if Tyrese Halliburton misses that shot?
I think the conversation is, I know what I would have said, because I was actually thinking about it as the game was concluding. I would have calmed Knicks fans down by saying, guys, I know it was ugly. I know you did everything wrong.
Right.
A win's a win.
Count your blessings.
Take your win and get the hell out of town.
Right.
Because that is my attitude about postseason basketball, postseason sports. Like, I don't care how pretty something is. But I don't care how ugly something is.
True, but necessarily all the stuff that we're talking about now and the loss, you'd still need to talk about. I mean, yes. Internally, they'd still need to do this in a win. If they had found a way to win that game, all those same issues still are there.
And I'm not saying we wouldn't have talked about it. I think we would have. We would have talked about how it was almost a near collapse.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, most Knicks fans would have said, well, we won the game, and that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing with that Boston series. Like, when the Celtic fan would say, hey, but we outplayed you, and we're not going to miss 75% of our threes, look out when that happens. My response then was, every game is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every game's a different story. You can't rely on that.
Right.
Bottom line is you lost. You're down 0-2. And I think the same goes here. The bottom line is you're down 0-1. Yeah, did you outplay them for 44 or 48 minutes or however you want to define it? Sure. But that doesn't mean anything for game two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one game doesn't storyline into the next game.
Right.
So if Halliburton had missed that shot, if instead of it popping in the air, it going in beautifully, it bounced around, I think there would have been a sigh of relief. And I know what I would have said. I would have been like, you guys are up 1-0. It sucked that it was ugly, but you won. It's all that matters.
Yeah, to me, the main talking point would have been when Brunson went to the bench, the Knicks went on a run. And even though they almost, you know, choked the game away, they still showed you that they were able to do well clutch late in the game without Brunson. And I would have said their bench, they being the Knicks, outplayed the Pacers in that game. And we all thought the Pacers bench was going to be a strength for them in this series. So to me, it would have been a great victory. I know a lot of fans would be like, well, we did this wrong, we did that wrong. I'd be like, what are you talking about? Brunson was in foul trouble in the fourth quarter on the bench, and we won the game.
Any playoff game you win is a great win.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Especially
when you're in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Of course, because the object of the game is to get to four first. That's it. It doesn't matter how you get there. It's get to four. Well, now the math tells me Indiana only needs to win three more times. The Knicks need to win four more times. This isn't like that complicated. So, yeah, I think there would be some level of hand-wringing about the way things went down. Mm-hmm. But the reality is they won the game. Or that's what we would have been saying. Now, the Tyrese Halliburton three to me, or the two, I should say, because it wasn't a three, is so fascinating on a many, many levels because we need to have a little truth serum here. I'm going to give you my truth serum. When Tyrese Halliburton went back behind the three-point arc, or at least he thought, and he put up that shot.
Right. He's looking at the clock, shot clock at the other end.
Yes. He puts up that shot, and it bounces off the iron and then up. I'm gasping. When it goes through the net, and I think I've been a good boy for an hour and 42 minutes. I have done no trolling, nothing. I am all my best behavior. So this is just a moment of honesty because I don't want to lie to you. I jumped out of my seat and was as excited as I have been probably since the Mets NLCS run. And I thought it was over because Kevin Harlan told me it was over.
Right.
If I stared at his foot, it was obvious it was a two, but Harlan was so committed to game-winning three,
right.
I was like, oh my God! And my wife, she slapped me down. She's like, really? Is this how you're acting?
Why does she not care? Why does she care
all of a sudden? It wasn't about the Knicks. It was about don't count your chickens. It's one game. Calm down. How are you going to feel if the result doesn't go your way? And then as she's giving me this lecture, I realize it's a two-pointer.
Mm.
And then, screw the Knicks. All I could think about was Durant. I'm sorry. It's my world. All I could think about was, oh my God. Oh my God. And I thought back to that night. I thought back to how I felt. So that was my emotion in that sequence.
It is miserable outside. It is miserable all around. If you are a Knicks fan, no, this isn't the end of the world. This isn't the worst thing to happen to the franchise. This isn't the knockout blow for an amazing season so far. But boy, did that suck last night. There's no other way to put it. It was actually worse statistically as far as a blown loss went than the two games that they came back in Boston. That's how unlikely and crazy this was. Neesmith going off and hitting those six threes in the fourth quarter sloppy turnovers, the Halliburton bounce, the Reggie Miller choke sign. I mean, the overtime being what it was. I mean, I still this morning as I'm sitting here cannot believe how that thing fell apart, how quickly it did, and that the Knicks are actually down in this series. Now, I still have faith in them. I really do watching the majority of that game. I feel like I'm a Celtics fan watching them play the Knicks, actually. I know we're the better team. I know the Knicks are the better team. But last night was alarming. It was crazy. And I just hope it's part of the championship video or the Eastern Conference Finals video saying that was the worst point of the season. And then they took off from here. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, G. I mean, I'm like you. I'm disappointed for sure in the way that the regular time ended, the fourth quarter ended, was just an absolute disaster. And it really did bring me back to the 90s, I'm telling you. And I was telling you yesterday, man, I told you this ain't going to be easy. And then I was thinking as they're up, I think it was 12, and I'm saying to myself, maybe G's right. Maybe they're going to be able to, you know, win this one going away and everything's going to be good. And then as I was thinking that to myself, all of a sudden, the ugliness happened and the turnovers, and it was a very entertaining game. And when you really think about it from just sitting back and watching a game, it's everything everybody said about the Pacers, that it was going to be frenetic. And could the Knicks match their pace? Could the Knicks keep up with them? They're going to throw nine guys at you. And, you know, damn well, the Knicks stayed right with them offensively. I mean, everybody in this series has got to figure out how to play better defense.
Yeah, I mean, and that is without a doubt, especially towards the end of the game in overtime. And, you know, I'm fine with the Knicks playing that pace because they're really good at it. And they, you know, prior to Nesmith going off, because that's really what this was. I mean, that was his epic performance from three and not being able to miss, by the way, in a Pacers uniform in front of Reggie Miller is unbelievable. And yes, I know the choke sign comes out with Halliburton, but really the guy who should have been doing it was Nesmith, because without him, this does not happen. But, you know, prior to that, everybody's doing exactly what you want. Mitchell Robinson's getting his offensive rebounds. Karl Anthony Towns is aggressive. He's hitting threes. You know, Jalen Brunson is putting together a game. When he's out because of foul trouble, OG Anunoby takes over, like when Jalen Brunson was out with the ankle injury. Mikal Bridges played a full four quarters of offense. These guys were great. Josh Hart was doing his thing. Everything was great.
It was great, man.
Everything was perfect.
Until the last two minutes, really.
I mean, insanity. I mean, and for Nesmith, I mean, he was unconscious, and Josh Hart said it, and you could tell watching it, is that they didn't have the same intensity on defense towards the end of the game because they thought that they had it wrapped up, essentially.
And I'm with you. I'm not like, I'm really disappointed. It was hard to fall asleep last night thinking about all of this and what happened and how it happened, but these things do happen. I am a little bit ticked off that Halliburton did what he did. And maybe that's okay for, you know, him and his team. And I don't think Rick Carlisle really appreciated it. But I will say that was some shot by Halliburton to tie the game. It was amazing.
It was lucky. Come on.
Listen,
it was lucky.
But the fact to have, you know, he went back to go make a three to win the game.
Yeah.
And his foot was on the line. I clearly saw that his foot was on the line.
Yeah, I mean, I looked right to the score bug because I'm like, that's a two. I mean, they better not give him a three. That's a two. And I knew that they were going to look at it anyway. But I made sure that.
But that's an amazing play by him. But the fact, you know, that he's running around with the choke sign and all this other crap. I mean,
listen,
you know.
Hold on. A couple of things. One, if that had gone in, he is 100% allowed to do that from three, meaning if that was a three-pointer, he's allowed to do that. And I give him credit because right after the game when he was interviewed on the court, he said, man, I tried to do the celebration. I thought we had won. I thought it was a three. It didn't work out. Thank God we won in overtime. So he had self-awareness of the fact that it was premature.
Still, the Knicks ended up choking away the lead in the fourth quarter, and it's the back pages of the papers and everything today, and that's all anybody's going to be talking about. And I would take that picture of him doing this, and I would hang it in my locker room. Because, you know, there's your villain. I think we all knew that coming into it. That's why his jersey's in the freezer. Now I'm going to have to put more ice on top of it.
Yeah.
But
You know what's crazy?
It's so frustrating because I'll tell you what's really crazy about all of this. If you told me that Karl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson were going to have the offensive output games that they had.
And they lost the game.
And they lost the game. I'd be like, you got to be kidding me. Now, the other thing, too, the Knicks had 40 free throw attempts.
Mm-hmm.
40.
And they missed a bunch of them, too.
They did 40 free throw attempts.
12 of them, they made 28 out of 40 or something. Yeah.
And then you had the Pacers had 100 field goal attempts.
Yeah, I mean, it was wild pace early on, and of course in the end as well. But you're talking about the Halliburton's jersey in the freezer. The time that the ball was up in the air after it hit the rim, that's what was in my head.
Yeah.
I was like, the jersey's in the freezer, and I'm watching it go up, and then bang, it goes in. I'm like, son of a gun.
Well, it's a long series, man. That's
no,
all I
know.
Tell you.
And that's really, like, that is the takeaway here. Like, and I know that it's just very hard to see that. And if you're driving into work today and you're in this nor'easter and it's cold rain and you're like, this is not supposed to be Memorial Day weekend and the Knicks lost and what the hell happened? Yeah, I mean, all of that is true. But I was really encouraged with the way that they played. They, for whatever reason, have to figure out when the other team is more desperate, they got to match that desperation because they weren't able to do that against the Celtics. They weren't able to do that last night. I still think they're going to win Friday night. I still think they're the better team. I still think they're going to win the series, but now it's going to be harder. And by the way, like, you know, these things, you don't just coast through these series unless you're, you know, the Chicago Bulls back in the day or the Golden State Warriors when they lost one game. You know, some of these dynasties, they coast right through the playoffs. This Knicks team's not going to coast right through the playoffs. We've seen 2 6-game series. You might get a 7-1 here. You're going to lose some games. All right?
There's going to be a 7-game series. I'm telling you, it's going to be brutal. And this is a brutal Thursday morning. You wake up, you're miserable, and rightfully so, because the team actually, offensively anyway, I mean, they match them. Speed for speed, hustle for hustle, a couple more turnovers than you would like, a couple more missed free throws than you would like. But at the end of the day, Indiana goes on a 20-6 run. Close out the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, that. So part of that is the Knicks being lackadaisical in the closing minutes and also doing some of the things that the Celtics were doing when they were blowing their lead, where they weren't slowing down the offense. They were hucking up threes because they were early in the shot clock because they were feeling it and they were bouncing off the rim and giving them an opportunity. But, I mean, you have to also...
And I'll tell you, you have that overturned call on Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
That, to me, I mean, he is like... all over Ananobi. Mm-hmm. There's a foul called.
Yep.
How do they overturn that?
Yeah, I'm sick of the overturn stuff. I mean, obviously, it really hurt the Knicks last night and a couple of calls. Reggie Miller even said, thank God we didn't have this when I was playing. Like, because, you know, it would have been the Knicks ball, you know, but they go back, goes off of Jalen Brunson's hand. The Knicks challenged a call early on in the game, didn't have another challenge. Rick Carlisle did, kept using them, kept winning them. You know, and it's just.
I just don't understand. Like, I see a still picture of Siakam. He's got OG's jersey. He's bumping into him.
Well, they're saying loose ball, the whole thing. He wasn't
loose ball. That. I mean, that was to me, that was a monumentous moment.
Yeah.
Monumentous? Yeah.
Monumental?
Monumental. Monumental momentous? Moment. Momentous game. Anyway, it was a big moment, either way you say it. In this game, and it was the part of the game where you're sitting there going, I cannot believe that just happened. You know, I hate these replays in basketball.
I know. And you know what's so as you're watching the game and the pace is breakneck, you're going back and forth.
Which
it's
is
like
awesome.
It was great. And then just once again, the fourth quarter, everything comes to a grinding halt because of these reviews. I mean, the fans are booing the review with the Ananobi Siakam thing we were just talking about is taking absolutely forever. Yeah, I mean, stunned. I can't, like, all the exact opposite of what it was leaving there last Friday night was what you got last night. I'm sure that they were just, everybody was quiet. Everybody was walking out of there, heads down, just completely shocked. But I don't know what it is about this. I think it's just because they played so well and they kept up with them. And I think that the Knicks have the more talent and the better players and they're going to get it done. But I'm still encouraged about their chances. About going to the finals. I just am. This sucked. This was bad. But, you know, the Knicks came back from a couple 20-point deficits, and obviously we know how that series went and ended up going the Knicks' way. But sometimes you got to eat crap when you're going to win, to win a title. And last night they had to do it.
The thing for me, honestly, was the fact that the game was wide open. This was not like tackle basketball the way that they were playing against the Pistons. You know, this
I think it suits them better.
I think so, too. I think it's wide open, and I think Tibbs is letting them play. And, you know, I was thinking I was thinking of Paul Westhead. Wasn't he the coach that used to say, get the ball, get down there and shoot it as quickly as possible?
Well, Mike D'Antoni was seven seconds or less, right?
But I thought it was Westhead before him.
Yeah, it was with the Suns.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So that's how I felt last night. I felt like it was a little bit of wide open basketball where you saw all the great athletes.
Yeah.
You know, show their stuff, and everybody had a little piece in this game. Even the bench had a little piece in this game. Now, the Indiana bench outscored the Knicks bench.
And it will every game. Yes. It's going to every single game.
Because they're
going to
get more minutes, and they're going to get more shots, and they're better players.
Yeah. I mean, we know one of the things that people say about the Pacers, it's true, is they are a deeper team. They play more guys, and the bench scoring is going to be in favor of them. But, you know, one thing about just strategically that I think would drive you crazy too, and we haven't mentioned it yet, is the inbound stuff.
Oh,
I mean,
God,
they could be the worst team in left. It could be the worst team out of every team that played this year at inbounding the basketball in critical moments. And by the way, how about defensively on the Obi Toppin dunk? I don't know what they're thinking, but they're just they don't have anybody on the inbounding player.
That is a complete. It's either a miscommunication or it's something that they were trying to do that I don't know. It just.
I mean, look at this.
Yes. That's. There's no rotation underneath.
I mean, and Mitchell Robinson, who's been amazing defensively, just had a brain fart there or something. I mean, I'm just really, really bad. And just some of these, you know, these inbound things. You had the Jalen Brunson trying to throw the ball off the Pacers, and then it ended up in OG Anunoby's hands. You had the Josh Hart. Everybody was slipping towards the end of the game, too. Brunson slipped a couple times. Josh Hart. You had that one, obviously, the one where it went off of Brunson's hand. I mean, they had so much trouble.
Hence why Halliburton was doing the choke sign.
But yeah,
because it's plays like that make you feel like the other team is, you know, tightening up, in crunch time. But
no doubt about it that's a part of it. But, I mean, the Nesmith threes, man.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen. A guy like that hitting 6 3-pointers in the fourth quarter in that amount of time. He was unconscious.
He was. And, you know, again, you talk about turnovers. You talk about lack of awareness in terms of your shot clock. There's so many things that go into it. And if a guy gets hot like that and they keep feeding him and he keeps hitting it, you know, exactly what this was like. Walt Frazier used to do this all the time. It just wasn't, you know, 3-point shots.
Yeah.
He would have to go manufacture 3-point shots, as older Knicks fans remember. But I wake up this morning, I'm disappointed. I'm really frustrated with the way that regulation ended. But I'm also encouraged by the way that the Knicks reacted and how open the game was. I prefer a little bit better defense, but man, if they're going to be that open and they're going to be that athletic and they're going to be running up and down the court like this, and Jalen Brunson is going to be going to the hole the way he was because he didn't have a great 3-point shooting night.
No, he didn't. And, you know, the biggest run that they went on was when he was on the bench, which is another thing that I think is an encouraging sign because, like, OG Anunoby got that same pep in his step when Brunson was on the bench that when Brunson was hurt and OG was the best offensive player on the team for them for a couple of weeks.
Well, and finally, campaign hit a couple shots.
Yeah, he did.
He took two quick fouls.
And Deuce was great again.
Foul, and then all of a sudden he hit two threes and looked like he got himself back in the game.
I mean, everybody was great until the end of the game when the Pacers were better. So, yeah, I mean, this you're going to win games you're not supposed to. You're going to lose games you're not supposed to. These are 7-game series. This was a rough one, but I'm still taking the Knicks 10 times out of 10 from what I saw a majority of that game last night. I'm with you. I'm encouraged with the way that they played. It felt easier for them to score than it had in the first two series by a lot.
Especially down low.
I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns
was a monster last night.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I'm ready already for Friday night for them to stomp them because I think that's what's going to happen. But this is also a little bit of a tip your cap spot to the Pacers. It really is. This wasn't just the Knicks choking this thing away. I mean, the Pacers had to do a lot of stuff to make a lot of really crazy stuff to make that comeback happen.
I'm telling you, I'm taking that sign where he's got Halliburton's got his hands around his neck and I'm hanging it in my locker room. I don't know how.
I hear you, man. I know.
I'm putting that right up, and I'm like, man, this guy. This is how we used to feel about Reggie Miller.
And by the way, people tend to forget because that's just that image that is the lasting image. But the Knicks won that series.
Yes,
Reggie Miller did the choking. So here we go again. Maybe history repeating itself. That would be great.
The
the Fan on this Thursday now afternoon. We are down with the king topic of the day, and sadly, BT, it's a historic loss from our Knicks. Last night, coughing one up at the world's most famous arena in unbelievable fashion. I still actually can't believe that that happened. It was a near-perfect game for about 3.5 quarters, maybe even longer than that, until the final few minutes of the game where the Knicks just couldn't do anything right. I'm in disbelief. I'm in shock. I'm less angry now than I was at 10 a.m., so I'm getting it out of my system a little bit. I'm not feeling overwhelmingly negative about the series, but that was a brutal, gut-wrenching, disgusting loss from the Knicks last night.
As bad as it gets, you know, we can watch sports 30 more years, 40 more years, 50 more years. I don't know that we'll necessarily see something like that. Although it's becoming more and more common in the NBA, these crazy comebacks. And I'm not saying you shouldn't react. Of course you have to react like a, whether you react like a madman after the game or you just can't sleep or whatever makes you get through the night to get to today to eventually get to tomorrow. You do what you got to do, and we can hit you with every depressing stat that details the choke job, the depth of the choke, but it's one game. And it's one game against a team that I still think the Knicks are very favorably matched up against. I know they've got a really good coach. I know they've got really good shooters and players, and they're tough, and they're accustomed to playing from behind. They did it against the Bucks. You know, they did it against the Cavaliers, and they were down by 7 with, I think, 34.7 seconds to go in Game 2. They are, like the Knicks, this should worry you as much as I'm trying to pep you up.
Yeah.
This should worry you a little bit. One of the great things about the Knicks is that they're very comfortable being uncomfortable, but so are the Pacers. And that's been documented time and time again. Their resilience, this might be the most resilient team they've met so far. More than the Celtics, even more than the Pistons, who were scrappy. They are not afraid of the Knicks, but I do think the Knicks are slightly better. And I think we get rocking tomorrow night.
That was one of the things what I said earlier, if you go back, check it out on the free Odyssey app, was where I would be concerned is that the Pacers are unflappable. They, in any situation, they are going to feel like they can win, especially after last night. They must be like Superman because you feel like you can't be beat. You know what? We're down 14. People were saying that about the Knicks, to your point, with the Celtics. Oh, the Knicks got them right where they want them. The difference is this Pacers team is very talented here, whereas the Knicks going up against the Celtics, it was fortunate that, you know, the injuries that the Celtics had, a fully healthy Celtics team, I don't believe it would have gone that same way. Whereas this Pacers team, they're legit. They are good, and they're on equal footing with the Knicks. I do think the Knicks are better. But the Pacers have been doing this consistently, and they have to feel like we just took your best shot, which clearly was the Knicks' best shot, and beat you in your building in dramatic fashion. When are you ever going to feel comfortable from a Knicks perspective that you have the Pacers down and out?
I'm not until they're actually down and out, if they get there. And I believe that they will, though. It's going to be a little tougher now. You know, the other thing, too, the Pacers, they have a lot of experience. I mean, I know the Knicks were banged up last year, and I think we all think, or many of us think, the Knicks would have beaten them if they were healthy. But, you know, at least they got to play more games in the conference finals against the Boston Celtics, the eventual champions. Unlike the Knicks, the Pacers didn't have this massive retooling in the offseason. They pretty much are the same exact team this year that they were a year ago.
Great head coach,
only a little bit, you know, older, a little bit stronger, a little bit more wise, a little bit more seasoned. So let's attack this very quickly here, because I think this will be interesting. We'll get back to the calls, obviously, BT and Sal. So after the Celtics lost those first two games when the Knicks came back, we were talking about, did the Celtics lose it or did the Knicks win it?
Right.
And which one was more? Mm-hmm. And it was my sense then that the Knicks won it more, because when you're down by whatever it was, 20 points with 8 minutes to go, whatever the exact margin was with the time to go, I said, well, if you get that many stops and that many makes, you took it more than they gave it to you. I'm trying to figure out if I feel the same way about last night. I like to be consistent with how I process these types of events, but I actually feel like last night the Knicks gave it away a little bit more than the Celtics did, and I'm a little conflicted with this because of the mistakes the Knicks had.
I was opposite, saying that I thought the Celtics were the team that gave
it. I know.
Look at the three-point shooting. I do think that last night, although I understand the analogy, I like it, and I can see why you're conflicted on it. I don't think it's you going against yourself.
Bad turnovers. Well, you know, that's what I'm saying. That's on the Knicks.
Yeah.
As much as the Pacers took it, it's on the Knicks.
Yeah, but the Pacers, to me, with Naismith, what was he, 8 of 9?
8 of 9.
Come on.
Yep.
8 of 9 from 3-point.
But how many were open? And that's on the Knicks.
Yeah. I think the Knicks coughed that game up. not knocking down the free throws, sloppy play, being gassed, the stupid foul, all those different things. There was obviously a little bit of bad luck. Not playing good defense with Bridges down the stretch.
Yep.
I thought the Celtics were to blame for the first two games with their poor shooting, and I think the Knicks were to blame last night, not for the poor shooting, for a litany of reasons. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Greg is calling from Mayapack. What's up, Greg?
Thanks for taking the call, guys. Last night was a repugnant disgrace.
Repugnant.
I couldn't fall asleep for a while, and you know, it you just add last night to a list of Nick moments that are just you can't make them up. You if you tried to describe them to somebody, they'd say you're lying. There's no way that you could have that much of a lead and blow it. You know the thing that really bothered me, and I'm not criticizing Tibbs. I was actually like, look at this. We're whipping them with Brunson on the bench.
Yeah.
Leave him there. Even if he sat till the friggin' whistle and the game is over, the guy got a lot of rest. He'll be ready for game two. BT, you said that you thought he was winded. He was sitting for so long. Yeah. How was he winded at the end of the game? Well,
I was just going to say, like, there was a lot of contact, and just for him to get the ball over the mid-court stripe and then initiate the offense, he's exerting so much. That's what I meant.
Okay. You know what, guys? I need for them, after they've whipped these guys' behinds, to in unison, I don't care who does it, they have to go and stand over Reggie Miller and all grab their throats and give it to him, because I've had enough. I remember that night that Reggie Miller did that.
Yeah, we all do.
Forget Reggie, Greg. It's about Haliburton, and thank you for the call. Real quick, Jalen Brunson was gassed. So I'm with you, BT.
He was shot.
I'm not saying that there's an excuse for him to be gassed. He was gassed. You could see that by the three, the air ball at the end. But even before that, you could tell that Brunson was just absolutely winded. And, Greg, it's not about Reggie Miller anymore. Forget Reggie Miller. It's about Haliburton. Now, what kind of celebration would you hand down to Haliburton if the Knicks do come back and win this series? Choke on knees type thing?
Oh, boy.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah, I know. That is going to be beautiful payback if we get there. Although, let's get there first. I'll come up with something creative if we need to. I got a question for you. I do have a question for you about Reggie.
Mm-hmm.
Has he texted you back yet?
No. I blocked him, actually. I didn't want to hear from him.
Good thing he didn't take us up on it. It's right now by Reggie. Imagine we had him on today.
I'll tell you, yesterday, whenever I texted him on Tuesday, I wanted to hear back from him. Then yesterday, I would like to hear back from him. After last night, I don't want to hear from Reggie Miller. Lose my number. I'm sure the same thing he said to me a couple days ago, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
It's over now. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to think about him. Unfortunately, we got to watch him do these games here.
Yeah. Well, one thing real quick here, Sal. So we've got it a lot today, and it's certainly your prerogative to do it from the callers. I get that, right? But I've heard a lot of you say, I don't want to criticize Tibbs. Why not? Honestly, why not? Like, it's not that hard of a line to straddle. Joe Torre got criticized. Bill Parcells got criticized. It's okay to criticize Tom Thibodeau without coming across as a Tom Thibodeau hater. It's okay. There were myriad malfunctions, some of which were his fault, some of which were not. But you don't need to... I don't think that you need to preface with the calls, I don't want to... Go for it.
Yeah, but here's why. Because they know and respect what he's done for this team.
I know and respect what Joe Torre did for the Yankees. I still criticize Joe Torre.
I'm not saying you
he
can't...
He's a champion.
Nobody should be above criticism. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that there is hesitation there, and I am one of those people. I believe in Tibbs. Doesn't mean you can't criticize certain moves that we talked about yesterday, the challenge and all that stuff, but how can you not... It's hurtful to criticize somebody who has given you all that Tibbs has, taking this team from the abyss, building the foundation, being an integral part in laying the groundwork to having the success that they've had in recent years. Is it a championship? No, but they've ascended, they've climbed, they've built it different ways. Here they are in the Eastern Conference Finals. It's one game. You, I think, have taken your criticism, and now it's your opinion. You're allowed to go as far as you want, but you remember weeks ago, months ago, whatever, not believing in Tibbs.
No, I stand by it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, like, you could take it to whatever level you want to. I do think that there are people like me who feel bad. You're right. We shouldn't. Mm-hmm. He's allowed to be criticized, but I'm just saying how I feel and maybe others. I feel bad criticizing him because I know the foundation that he's built.
And by the way, I appreciate the sensitivity. Like, I truly do. I mean that. But to me, you know, you can be both. You can be somebody who set the culture in motion and we are deeply indebted to. And, you know, listen, this is not, again, fire Tom Thibodeau today. I'm not talking about that. But it's okay to say, hey, we appreciate what you've done. And here we are in the Eastern Conference Finals and we got to get some more wins. We'll get to the NBA Finals. But also understanding that he made some colossal mistakes again last night. Now, I believe, I can't possibly prove this, but this does fit my narrative or my beliefs about Tom Thibodeau. I believe if Coach Carlisle is on the Knicks bench last night, Knicks win the game. I have no doubts about that. Can't prove it. There's really nowhere to go with that statement. I believe Rick Carlisle's that much better than Tom.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Mike is calling from Queens. What's up, Mike?
How are you? So this isn't by any means a criticism of Brunson, who's just changed the face of the franchise. But one thing that I wish Brunson would acknowledge, or at least maybe the coaches would say to him. So when he was on the bench and we went on this run, everybody's involved. The energy's high. OG's involved. McBride's hitting shots. And then Brunson comes in, which I agree with that move. You don't want him sitting. You know, the game wasn't over. But then everything stalls. Like Brunson sometimes needs to take over a game. Like, we won't win unless he takes over a game and has the ball and creates his own shot. Last night was not one of those times. If we can have parts of the game when Brunson needs to take over, when where the other players are observing, and then Brunson to understand the energy and then become the facilitator and keep people involved, keep the energy up, keep the gas on. That's what we needed last night. We didn't need Brunson to come in and dominate the ball.
I think you're right, Mike. I think that's an outstanding point, but I think that's who Jalen Brunson is, and it's a lot more amazing than not, but he's more of a two-guard. Like, he's got the two-guard mindset. He's like Iverson in a way that now he doesn't have the burst or the hops that Allen Iverson had. Not nearly the athlete that AI was, but in terms of being ball dominant with a scorer's mentality and you know, a deep portfolio of moves to get to his spot, to get his shot. I mean, Jalen Brunson hunts shots, and that is usually good for us because when he's hunting, he's usually making. But to the Calder's point, when it's time to maybe deviate from that and spread the wealth a little bit, it's more two guard, and I think that wins over the point guard part of the brain.
Yeah, but think about what we're saying now. And we've heard from a lot of callers talking about, oh, just leave him on the bench, leave him on. Yeah, okay. You want Jalen Brunson on the bench for Deuce McBride and Cam? Like, come on.
Yeah, I never thought that last night. I never thought that in real time.
We were fortunate to have them go on the run that they did. I think it's encouraging moving forward in the series that you saw some players that can spell Brunson and give him a rest. And Brunson obviously being gassed, well, you would think the rest would have helped him there. It did not in that particular case. I'm not saying Brunson was great down the stretch. I don't think he was sloppy with the basketball, all those different things. But let's not make it like you're better off without Jalen Brunson. We would all kill to have the ball in Brunson's hands with a chance to win in the fourth quarter. That's been the recipe.
I'm with you. But you have to understand this, guys. Like, think about the purest point guards. I'll just pull John Stockton. I'll just say, I'm not saying he's the best, but I'll say John Stockton, right? So, you know, even though they never won a championship, probably not the best example, but he was amazing. And there's just too many great players in his way, otherwise he would have been a champion. The point is that when the Utah Jazz needed a structured half-court set, a late game bucket, late situation bucket, he was so used to delivering the ball to whether, obviously, Mailman, but also Byron Russell and some other players too. He was so used, Hornacek, he was so used to doing that because that's how he played from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. And he never really deviated from that. Now, some nights he'd get 20, but he was always a pass-first guy. When you're Brunson and you're hunting 30, 35 points out of necessity, because that's kind of what makes the Knicks when he's on, you can't expect him to, with a minute and 9 seconds left or 13 seconds left, morph into John Stockton.
Right. Well, true point guards in our mind, in our era, true point guards were facilitators.
Yeah.
Now the true point guards are scorers. So he's not the facilitator of this. Josh Hart, to me, would be the guy on the ball, going to facilitate, move the ball around. With Brunson, it can be a lot of, you know, hero ball sounds degrading, but the one-on-one stuff or trying to create a little bit on his own. But that's I mean, that's what you want in today's NBA, right? Mm-hmm. We can talk about Dame Lillard forever, Donovan Mitchell. Again, I know that, you know, Mitchell more of a two guard as well, but think about it. An on-the-ball guard,
yep,
that's kind of what you want. That's what Brunson is, and it is positionless basketball. So he's not Derek Harper or Stockton, to your point. Right, Harper,
Mo Cheeks.
Well, whatever. These guys would
Dennis Johnson
would be more facilitators, get the ball down low.
Yeah, no question.
That's not Jalen Brunson. That's not his game, and I'm not going to.
It's probably not the NBA anymore,
well,
by the way.
That's the point.
Not just Jalen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Frank is in White Plains. What's up, Frank?
Hey, bud.
I can't put all blame on the coach, Thibodeau, but I tell you, most of it is his fault. Number one, he should never keep, almost all fourth quarter, he keep Brunson out. Number one. Number two, look at the time. He should control the damn time on the shooting. He let, you know, they have a 14-point lead with a little bit over 2 minutes left. He's to be blamed for this because he didn't really coach the good game on the inter. That's the bottom line, okay?
No, I disagree with that, Frank, and thank you for the call. I don't think that it was he coached a bad game. Matter of fact, the majority of the game, it was a great game. It was one of the best games the Knicks have played this postseason, especially in that fourth quarter when the bench was taking over and they were starting to pull away. Down the stretch, nobody was perfect. I'm not. If you had to blame one singular person or reason for the Knicks' loss last night, what would it be? Would you credit the Pacers?
First of all, you have to credit the Pacers. Yeah, okay. I think to not do that is ridiculous. So I'm going to give them a time.
Like, probably Neesmith would be the primary reason, because with all the other stuff that went against the Knicks, if this guy doesn't shoot lights out,
yep,
not missing all of those threes, open or not, we saw guys last night, both the Knicks and the Pacers having open looks and missing them. It's basketball. Not easy to make. Even in the open look, sometimes you think too much. Neesmith was knocking down every bleeping one.
That's sick. I will actually give you my order of culpability. Yeah. Most culpable, number one, last night was the refs. Okay? Number two to me was Tom Thibodeau.
Are you saying because of the goaltend, or is there another specific?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of plays. The play went with OG Adonobi.
Yeah.
Now, that's one we kind of glossed over.
But even by then, it was still kind of over. I know the challenge.
I know it was a tough call. I didn't think there was enough evidence to overturn it, number one, and that's one thought. But I also thought that OG's hand, I thought he had more control myself. It was close. It wasn't like 80-20. 55-40. I thought he had a little more possession, and I thought that there was a motion. You see his hand flick through like he's trying to follow up the shot. That was my interpretation. But I thought most culpable were the refs. I thought number two was Tom Thibodeau, and I think number three for me was Jalen Brunson. That's the order for me.
I would go Brunson more so than Tibbs. I would go OG Anunoby missing the free throw, or even that call that going his way. The Anunoby missed, you know, half dunk, layup.
Yep.
Yeah, I would go Brunson one, Anunoby two. I mean, obviously, I'm crediting Naismith above all, but if you're looking for blame, and there's bad luck with the refs, I'm not even, like, I can't, I'm sorry, I can't get on Tibbs. I don't think that this was his fault. I don't think it was glaring that the head coach screwed this game up when the players had to do one of any several things differently for a different result.
By the way, I was close to flipping, putting Tibbs one, refs two, because I don't like to bail out a team like that. But last night was fairly egregious enough. I'm cool with it. Here's the thing. Like, if you're just watching, it's not like, you know, you watch an NFL game and you're like, oh my God, why does he not burn a timeout? You got the 2 minute warning. Like, there's just an egregious mismanagement of a certain situation. That's not what happened here with Tom Thibodeau. I'm not saying that at all. But there were too many checkpoints when you had that big of a lead, whether it was an adjustment on defense to alter and just present some resistance beyond the stripe, whether it was a timeout to thwart their energy, whether it was a timeout for a different substitution. I know he didn't miss the free throws. He didn't make the bad calls. But those final 6-7 minutes there, Tom Thibodeau simply has to be better if the Knicks want to win a championship.
PT and Sal on the Fan. More of your calls when we come back. 888-808-1019. We're talking Knicks. The heat is on. PT and Sal back on the Fan on this Thursday afternoon. 888-808-1019. Doesn't feel like Memorial Day weekend, does it? I know the big party tomorrow with DJs, with Boomer and Geo. The morning show will be out there having some fun.
Stinks.
As we kick off the summer with Memorial Day weekend. Dude, it's like 40 degrees. It's raining out.
It's cold, man. It's actually really cold. It's cold. I wore shorts to work yesterday. I was freezing.
Yeah, it's too cold. I open the pool. I got to worry about that now. I'm probably going to have to empty it out with all this rain and the cold. I don't want the heater on because I'm not going to be going in anyway. So I don't want to waste the gas on the... What the hell is this? It's supposed to be Memorial Day weekend celebrating the summer.
Do you have outdoor sprinklers for the lawn? Do you turn them on yet? Yeah, right? They're turned up by now. No? You didn't turn them on yet?
No, they're on, but I should have turned them on. I got the, they have like the water sensor or whatever it is.
Yeah,
so it should be on and not.
Yep.
But I don't trust that water sensor. And when it's raining.
Neither do I. I was going off the other day. It's supposed to once a certain amount of water hits, they're supposed to be shut off. And we do them every other day in the morning.
Right.
In increments, like whatever, 15 minutes in each zone. We have 8 zones, whatever. And I'm like, it's raining out. I walk out. Why the hell are these going off?
Wasting water, dude, which is wasting money.
It's all a scam.
I got to text my wife, although she wouldn't know what the hell to do here. You're right. It is all
a scam. Racket.
But I want to shut that thing off, make sure that that water's not. We don't need it. We've
been
getting money.
I've done that before.
BT and Sal.
Can't overfeed the arborvitae, Sal.
I got to
make sure those girls are in good shape.
And it's not like the grass is going to get burned, obviously.
No. Although too much, oversaturation could... suffocate roots, and it could be, too much water is not good.
You're more on top of this than I am.
Have you
looked when the weather is going to, I guess
it's going to be really nice. It's going to start. The weekend's going to be good. It's not going to be incredibly warm. It's going to be sunny over the weekend, maybe a high of 70 on Saturday or 60-something.
Monday, high of 71.
Yeah, we're going to get back there. This is just kind of, I was going to say an anomaly, but listen, the weather pattern's so whacked out, and as much as I follow a lot of things about the world, I've said this before, I cannot offer anything intelligent about global warming. I don't denounce it. I just don't know anything about it.
Just start recycling, will you?
I do.
Yeah, no.
Here's what I know. Here's what I do know, though. Like, Al, when I said this to you, it didn't hit you. Like, you're like, huh? I think you'll get it now. It took you a minute to get it, but you got it back then as well. I think what's happening now, our Aprils and Mays or what our Octobers used to be like back in the day. Like, it's flipped.
Okay, but we don't know why.
I can't offer anything intelligent past that point, except the observation that it seems like it's flipped a bit.
So then September and October are going to be warmer.
Oh, they always are?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God, there's times, I'm watching my son play football. It's like 89 degrees on a Saturday in September. Absolutely.
Right. So really, pool season should be like maybe June. You start opening up around June. You want it open by Memorial Day weekend.
No, for sure, now.
And you used to be before you close it before September or around September, Labor
Day
after Labor Day.
Yes, yes.
But now you go to October with it, maybe.
Well, you can. What happened before we moved into our home, we were in a condo in a community, right? And they had a communal pool, and they started to, I guess they adjusted to the warming, whatever's happening with the weather, where they would keep it open, not every day, but every Saturday through September.
Right, okay.
And we've been in our home for 7 years, so that was a while ago. It's a mess.
BT and Sal on the fan. Ronald is calling from NYC. What's up, Ronald?
Hey, guys.
You're in Manhattan, NYC? Where exactly are you?
Right now, I'm in the Inwood area.
Okay.
Love it.
There you go, Inwood. Well, what's
Inwood,
up?
Inwood, it was up to no good.
What's up, Ronald?
He's got sound.
I'm a Knicks fan.
I like got that. It. Inwood always up to no good.
I know.
Okay. Yeah.
Even Hollywood trying to get up in this. All right, go ahead, Ronnie.
I'm a Knicks fan, and I'm feeling optimistic about the Knicks series just because if you watch the first quarter, the Pacers came out gun blazing, They scored 6 field goals, and then they took a timeout. So they haven't missed yet, and Knicks is still catching up with them. 6-for-10 field goal percent, and they come out the timeout, and Pacers is still, they went without missing until 10, and then they missed. But a Miles Turner and all those guys stepped up real good. So my takeaway is that the Knicks took that. They took that blow and somehow came back, and I just don't know how they lost the lead after that. Then I'm dumbfounded after that.
Yeah, well, that's part of the problem, Ronald. Thank you for the call. Yeah, I mean, early on, BT, we didn't really discuss the beginning of the game because it was all about the end of the game. But early on, the Pacers were not missing a shot.
Man.
But still, the Knicks weathered the storm. It was frustrating. Like, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, oh,
it was fun, actually. It's good pace.
Right. But exactly. It was a fun pace. It was a fun game. I was loving every second of that game, even with it being tight and back and forth. I know the Knicks had the lead at the half and third quarter, whatever, still tight game. But that was a fun basketball game. Good energy, good pace to it, good shot making, good offense there. Not much defense, but and then the Knicks started to pull away, and then the collapse of all time. Like, see, it's not just a loss, and it's not just a bad loss. That is a historic loss. When something happens for the first time ever in nearly 1,000 games.
Yes, 970 to be exact.
That is a, like, that's why I'm having a hard time of letting this one go. Yes, it is just one game. Yes, it is a best of seven. No, the series is not over. We know that. But, dude, that doesn't happen. It hasn't happened ever in the history of the sport to where the Knicks blew or a team blew that big of a lead with that little time to go.
Up 14 or more with 2.5 minutes to go or less in the fourth quarter. Last 27 years, who knows, maybe it happened back. But right. Without the three-point shot, there's no way that was happening with George Mikan and the Minneapolis Lakers. I'm just going to take a guess. Or the Syracuse Nats. So I'm looking back at our text chain from last night, you and I, right? And I, by the way, how sick is that Brunson shirt that I
love
sent
that.
You?
Yeah, I love my
friend,
that.
So I got to rock it after a win. My friend sent me the really cool, like the sign that he makes when he makes the three. It's a Roto Wear. Awesome. So I sent Sal a picture of that. You know, you're sick, a cat ball, and we're going back and forth. Sal shooting them threes, which what you've been saying you want Cat to do.
Yeah, finally.
We're having a good time, and I'm like, they look awesome. You are perfect offense, drive and kick, get to the line, knock down the three, utilizing everybody, love the matchup for him. And I wrote, this is the last thing after this, we didn't extend it. We didn't say anything. I said, yep, I said, no doubt, but this is still the type of pace that Indy wants. They play 9 or 10, we don't. So far, so great, but thinking big picture for the series. And I wrote that to you. Because as the game's unfolding, even when the Knicks had the lead, that's why they didn't foul Mitchell Robinson. We talked about that. Because when you do that, you stagnate the game, and they don't want to do that. They want to get up and down, free flow, and no stoppages. So even when the Knicks were looking good, I was – and I'm not usually skewing negative like, oh, we're up big, we're going to find a way to lose. No, if we're up big, I'm saying we're going to find a way to win. I always skew optimistically with that. But there was something about the pace of the game last night that did worry me.
BT and Sal on the fan. Steve is in Flushing. What's up, Steve?
Steve-O.
Guys, what's going on?
How are you, Steve?
I'm doing okay. A little shell-shocked from yesterday, as you guys are also. But listen, BT just brought up the pace. That's one of the main things I wanted to talk about. Listen, the Knicks had, what, 5 days off, 4 days off before game one? And Indiana had, what, 7 days off? And that's probably why the pace was so, you know, frantic. But the Knicks were gassed at the end of that, and they had 5 days off. Just what do you think is going to happen now? They're going to play every other day for the next, let's say 5-6 games of this series. They're going to be, listen, by game five, the Knicks are going to be like, to me, even if they tie it at 2-2 going into game five, at the pace that they're playing, this favors Indiana. And, I mean, I just listen, the Knicks as a franchise have never won a series in their history when they lose game one at home. Like, it doesn't bode well for these guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, the history is what it is. I got you. But again, before last night, 970 games with the numbers that we just gave you before, up 14 with 2.5 to go, nobody had ever lost. So, not to spit in the face of history, but this is a new team with a new identity trying to carve out a championship legacy and hope they get there. I know it's, and listen, I just said what I said about the pace, so I'm with you. I obviously agree. I was thinking it last night. But I also don't think that every game is going to mirror each other. And you're going to have foul issues on their end. You might have an injury one way or the other. Not that I'm hoping for, but, it's part of the deal. You might have a different whistle in game two, which I suspect we will. So I don't think, now, if it does look like this the rest of the way, Knicks might lose in five. But if they're not losing the series, they might lose fast. The onus is on the Knicks to change the style, and not entirely, but just kind of flip it. Right now, the Knicks are against the ropes. Get to the middle of the ring. And good fighters are able to do that, and that's got to be led by Tom Thibodeau and their best player.
I thought definitively going into last night and into the series, the Knicks were the better team. I don't know if I could say that as definitively or as confidently after watching it last night.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll jar your confidence. I'm still...
The Pacers are deep. We knew this. I'm not caught off guard by how good they are.
Uh-huh.
But
they're not afraid of us. That's for damn sure.
Well, that's the thing. They just have uber confidence, dude. That is tough to... And they're good. They're good. They're confident. They're smart. They're well-coached. They've been as resilient a group. Name the team in NBA history that has done what they've done here throughout one postseason series where they're coming back when it looks like they're dead. It's over. The game's over. They've been road warriors as well. Nothing phases this team.
No, no. And I listen, what Sal's referring to here is, you know, you go back to that Bucks series, which was game five. They're used to this. That's why they are as comfortable being uncomfortable as our Knicks are. They trailed by 7 with 34 and a half to go in overtime. They won. That was the Bucks series. They trailed the Cavs by 7 in game 2 with 46.7 to go. They won. So they are used to playing under stress and, you know, mounting comebacks, and they can score points in a lot of bunches. They can get to the rim when they want to, but everybody could shoot, including their big Miles Turner. They've got a little more depth, and they walk into the series than the Knicks. They walk into the series, even though we know the Knicks were diminished physically a year ago. In their mind, they're saying, all right, we beat them. And then the other thing, yeah, we know that they're more talented this year with the addition of Cat and Bridges, but while the Knicks were making tweaks and trying to find that chemistry, the Pacers just had a carryover of chemistry, because their team is exactly the same as it was a year ago. So it's going to be tough. I hear you. My confidence, my faith in the Knicks' ability to win the series or clearly being the better team, I'm going to, like you said, a little damaged, but I still believe they're the better team.
When we come back, we'll power up with the worst losses. Top five worst losses that we've each experienced.
Now it's time to power up with BT and Sal.
Hi, BT, we're powering up with actually some bad moments. Top five worst losses in our fandom. Let's go number five through number one. You want to start us off?
Sure. I could easily say the time I lost a Tecmo Bowl and threw it out the window in college because I lost, you know, $25. I mean, there's a lot of losses to choose from.
That's a good one.
All right. You know that story. I've told you that on the air. Number five to me, and I mentioned this before, and I didn't really think it would make my list here, but I really do have to go St. John's, Arkansas.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the most, it's a very unique loss here. Because the euphoria, and you were here next to me every day.
Yeah.
You know, you went to the Garden, you talked to Rick, you were enjoying the St. John's run as well. And it just, like, when it ends, it ends. And it was so abrupt that I remember, you know, 31 wins, Big East regular season.
Supposed
Big East
to win that game.
Supposed to win that game, favored a two seed, all the things. It was an amazing season. But I just remember getting back to my hotel room, I'm like, wow. It's really over. And in college, especially with the transfer portal, it's never the same. So, I mean, it was an amazing experience, but and that's personal for me because I've been doing the game so long and I've never called an NCAA tournament win. And I'm thinking Sweet 16, going to San Francisco. It ended hard. It was rough.
All right. For me, number five, I'm going with last night's game.
You are.
It cracks the top five for me. There are others. Look, I mean, as sports fans, we all remember the losses, the brutal losses that we endure. This one last night was so bad, and such a historic collapse. And the only reason why it's not higher is because it's only game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. But think about how bad a loss has to be in current day to impact 45-year-old Sal versus 25-year-old Sal. Mm. That was such a horrific, unbelievable loss last night. It has to be on my top five worst feelings. Dude, I'm telling you, I was sitting there just despondent watching the TV and watching the replays and watching the post-game stuff and like, I cannot believe they just lost this bleeping game. So
wow.
It was number five. Obviously not the worst, but the fact that it would crack top five shows you how bad that loss was last night for me.
That's interesting. Respect. Now, if this is 10 years from now, would it find a way into mine? If they were to lose the series, because I'm still confident, right. but I hear you. All right, number four for me. Now, understand, I'm answering these how I feel moment.
Yes.
And this could be higher. So, obviously, 98 was a glorious season for the Jets. 12 wins, divisional championship, losing Denver. Blake Spence, but, you know, the block punt, they're winning at the half, and then it unravels. We would have played your team in the Super Bowl. I really, you push back. I think we would have smoked you guys. Who the hell knows? Whatever. I think I'm going to get my first championship. The loss, though, is actually the next year. Week one, 1999. I'm at the game. I'm in the old Meadowlands, right? It's the Jets and the Pats. And Vinny ruptures his Achilles. And at that point, I really didn't know much about the Achilles. Like, I wound up doing mine maybe 9-10 years after that. But back then, the Achilles, just like an old man, Achilles, whatever, I don't have to worry about that. And I just remember Keyshawn's reaction post-game and everything. I knew the season was over to the point when Tom Tupa, the punter, came in and threw a touchdown to Keyshawn Johnson. My buddy Rob, who I used to go to the games with, he's jumping. He's like, yeah, we're winning. I didn't even celebrate because I knew that moment the season was over. Walking out of that stadium was next level hurt, dude.
I like the way that you describe your list because I went under the same thing. Just my feelings when enduring these losses, not necessarily just the magnitude of it. Number four for me, this was both the feelings I had and the magnitude of it. And it's actually surprising. It shows how many bad losses I've had as a sports fan to endure. Game five of the 2000 World Series. Now, game one was actually worse as far as the game goes, because that was a more gut-wrenching loss, and you knew once the Mets blew an opportunity in game one against the Yankees in 2000, they probably weren't going to win the series. But being at game five, seeing the Piazza ball that I thought was gone off the bat fall in the glove of Bernie Williams, seeing the Yankees celebrate on Shea Stadium turf, having to walk out through that.
How is that not number one?
Well, young, I'm gonna give
you something.
That's
about as bad as it gets. Good God, slinking to the cars or the trains?
There's three.
After the Yankees celebrate on Shea Stadium dirt?
I know.
Wow.
Three that I have worse than that.
I forgot you were at that game. That's a brutal. That's tough.
Tough to top that one, but somehow my fandom has. Anyway, that was number four.
That's a good one. I'm going to go a little baseball here. And this is different. This is the. Now, obviously, this hurts as a Yankee fan. But I'm going to go with the 2001 World Series, and I go directly to 9/11. That's all I go to. Yeah, listen, when the Yankees were up 3-0 on the Red Sox, obviously, and the Red Sox came in and they dented Kevin Brown, and they just went nuts at a grand slam. That was crushing. But the 9/11 tie-in to, like, want it so badly for the city, for the Yankee fans, who, not that it was going to change anything, unfortunately, but just a moment of happiness, a temporary respite from the sadness which took over our entire world, country, but really our city. I wanted that. I mean, it was a different one. Yeah, I wanted to beat the Mets. Yeah, I wanted to beat the Braves in 96, and again, the Braves and the Padres. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted that so bad. When that broken bat, I just sat there comatose. I'm like, wow. It almost made me question when I say things happen for reason. My mom's always said that, and I believe it. I believe it. But that one tested the limits of that. That was one I could not believe they did not win.
Yeah, it didn't seem right after all that
went on.
Although, like I always bring up, at that particular point, I was rooting against the Yankees. I could root for the country, but I was rooting against the Yankees. Not going to lie. That was one of my greatest sports wins, the 2001 Diamondbacks. Number three for me, Game 7, 2006, NLCS. Mm. And the reason why I have that more painful than the Yankees one is because I fully went to that game expecting the Mets to win. And I also believe that that Mets team was the most worthy Mets team of a World Series win that I have seen post-1986. That 2006
that team
should have been a World Series winning team. And to see that Game 7 unfold the way that it did, and to hear when Yadier Molina hit that home run, I was in the upper level, to hear the dugout celebrating, the Cardinals dugout celebrating amongst 50,000 people that had just been silenced that was a sickening feeling. I still can't even believe that happened. The Mets have a bunch of losses, but that one will stick with me because I believed in that team that they were going to be the World Series champs. So Game 7, 2006, NLCS, Beltran, bat on the shoulder, Wainwright, that whole thing.
Nasty.
That was number three for me.
I mean, I'm just looking at the box score from that date. I mean, Reyes, LaDuca, Beltran, Delgado,
Floyd
Wright,
with a
Sean
big pinch
Green.
Hit, trying to come up. He didn't get the job done later in that game.
Yeah, Valentin, wow.
Yeah.
Chavez, I was on the air actually at 10:50 when that happened. I could not believe he did not swing. All right, man, you've walked out of Shea.
Dude.
With some.
I can't even get to the final regular season game in 2008 at Shea. That was an embarrassment where they had the celebration.
When they walked out, right? Everybody walked out from center field, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, after the fact the Mets were eliminated on the final day of the year in the final home. God. No, I've had some bad ones at Shea.
All right. Number two, I don't know if this is going to make your list because we're running out of space, but it very easily could, and it might. You win Game 7, miss finger roll 96, pardon me. 95, yeah. So 94, of course, they lose to the Rockets. Now, as much, Mattingly's my all-time favorite athlete, you know that. But there's a different energy. There's a different, like, what you put out as you watch a basketball game versus a baseball game. And also through the last 6, 7, 8 years, Donnie was hurt. I don't know that I've ever hurt for a player and wanted for a player as much as I wanted for Ewing. And you just knew it, the way it looked, and just the despondency. you could. It just looked awkward where he got the ball. He looked a little indecisive. Then I'm like, oh, he's going. Oh, he's going to yoke it. Oh, no, he's going to roll it. Oh, no, back rim, it's out. What? And you see the Pacers, Mark Jackson celebrating, a New York kid celebrating our low moment. And I saw Patrick, like, just looking around like, wow. That's when you have to think he's just never going to win a championship. Because then it was over. Then the next year, Don Nelson came in, and then he was gone. Then Van Gundy. To me, that was the end of the true, even though they made it in 99, the true Knicks. That one crushed.
Trying to go over all the other losses and trying to see now what you have for your number one.
You'll never guess.
My game.
You will never guess.
My number two?
Yep.
Game 7, 1995, semifinals, the Ewing finger
roll. Wow, okay, there
so
you go.
We agree on that one. I told you the story recently. I remember I remember watching the TV in disbelief. I couldn't believe that it was over when Ewing misses, the ball bounces off the back of the rim, and I'm like, oh my God, like all you invested after the finals the year before, and you're thinking, all right, well, this year we're going to get back, we're going to win it all.
Yep.
Having that happen and the sudden finality to it. And then me, I had to go vent in the backyard, dunking the basketball out of frustration. I called the station, Bill Daughtry. I remember where I was in my bedroom, my little bedroom in my parents' house watching it. I didn't know what to do with myself. That one hurt. Didn't have to be there to feel the pain of that one. And you're right, it was even more than just that one game. That hurt me more than game 7 of the finals the year before. Like, I was hurt by me personally.
Mm-hmm.
I was hurt by that, but this one, the 95 one, was devastating.
Well, and it was also his 11th year, so you kind of knew as you started to time. And he didn't quite look the same. He wasn't as bouncy. He was still really good, but he wasn't quite Patrick anymore.
All right, what's your number one?
Number one. All right, so you'll never – I can give you the million guesses. You'll never guess this. To me, it's 1995, Game 5, wild card, Yankee-Seattle. Because I knew, number one, the manner in which it happened.
Remember that game.
Of course. Bullet down the line. Edgar, I was always terrified of him. That Seattle team was tough, as even though the Yankees won the first two, Donnie hit a home run, hit .417 in the series. He was balling out. I gotta slip that in there. You know, Griffey flying around the bit. Brent on the call. Brent Musburger on the call. The relay to, you know, for, I believe, was that Gerald? I think that was Gerald Williams who got it in left field. The plate layer, it's in a pile of dirt, and Vince Coleman. It was so abrupt, but I also didn't know, but I strongly felt almost like a force thing. Because I love Mattingly so much, I feel like the force told me at that moment he's going to retire, even though we didn't really know. So when I saw Donnie walking off the field, I'm like, I just watched his last game. It's over for Mattingly, and nobody loved Mattingly like me.
That's a great one. Oh, I mean, look, we've had some bad loss. For me, I'm not going to rehash the whole thing or go into great detail, but nothing will ever beat. I don't think in the history of sports fandom, nothing will ever beat being a fan of the idiot, loser, pathetic Atlanta Falcons who blew the worst lead in the history of football in Super Bowl 51, up 28-3, late third quarter. The fact that that loss was hung on me as a fan, I have to question the sports gods and think that that's not fair. Why them? I could see the Yankees having a bad loss. I could see the Knicks having a bad, like New York, want to hit the like, who gives a crap about the Falcons to be the biggest chokers in the history of sports? I'll never forget that night. I'll never forget that game. I will never, ever get over the result of that game. I will never be the same fan that I was prior to that game. It's impossible
that
to
change
be so.
That changed you.
100%. You can't overcome that. I'm sorry. There's no coming back from that.
What did you do? Like, do you walk around? Because you were with me. Were you guys married yet?
Yeah.
You were just married or still engaged? Or going out? I forgot.
No, I think we were engaged, about to be married later that year.
As the story goes, Sal's future wife brought a friend who's not a big football fan. So the viewing, just the whole vibe was compromised.
After everybody left and was asleep, I sat there and watched the post game over and over. I immersed myself in the misery and disbelief.
You did. You embraced it, huh?
Just blew this bleeping game, and I will never, ever, ever forgive them for that. That's why I hate Dan Quinn to this day.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Nerds. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.